couple of days, but the weekend's looking pretty good.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, because I know we have a lot to get to. I just want to just say one thing. I went shopping for a suit yesterday, okay?
I saw the pictures. Go ahead.
Okay, so I went shopping for a suit yesterday. It was like $675, but it was marked down. Wait. It was marked down, this and that, 30% off, another 20% off. I got it for like $275, right? but it didn't fit. So I had to take it to a tailor today. And I didn't tell anybody because my wife is just going to kill me. How much does it cost to tailor a suit? Now, I have to pick it up on Tuesday, so I think there was a little bit of a rush. But how much does it cost to usually tailor something? I never really figured that out, so I'm wondering if I'm paying way too much.
Brady and I we have this blank look back at each other.
No, no idea, right?
Are you seriously asking
this
us?
This is like the Price is Right.
This,
you know,
question
I mean?
About tailoring a suit.
Yeah, tailored a suit. How much do you think it cost to tailor a suit? Now, he had to do the pants, the jacket, the shoulders, you know, custom fit it and all that. It's Jose the Tailor Maker right here in Westwood Boulevard. So you tell me, how much do you think it cost to tailor a suit? Well, the highest, without going over, I feel like it's the Price is Right. Rich,
okay.
You want to go first?
$1.
No, come on.
Oh, that's right. I have to be the final bidder. Yeah, Brady, why don't you go first? I'll take $1.
I would say about $100.
Okay, Rich, you want to take a guess what it
101.
$150.
Yes.
$150. I'm like, really? I go, you can't give me a better price. I got to do this and that. Am I getting ripped off? Isn't $150 a little bit of that's a lot of money to tailor? The suit's only costing me like $250.
Why don't you just get a suit that fits you? Who cares about a tailor? If it's a little tight, then lose 5 pounds.
Arnie doesn't really have a body type that's like like sold in most suits.
I'm not an off the rack guy. I kind of have to buy a jacket one size and then dig through the pants for another size. It's very stressful.
I don't know. I've had the same suit since I was 18 years old. I still wear it to all the weddings and funerals. Yeah. I think I paid $50 for it.
Rich, I have to ask you something. Arnie, I got a bit of a beef with Rich. Not just with Rich, but with the crew here at the station.
Wow, I love this stuff.
Last night was a beautiful night. Went out and grilled, right?
Okay.
Made hot dogs, made burgers, had two leftover burgers. Came back in today expecting to eat my burgers for lunch, and I went down to the fridge, and I thought, okay, I'll heat it up in the microwave, and then does the fridge have any condiments? Ketchup, mustard, anything like that?
No,
they actually, there was.
Yeah.
Now,
mayo.
Wow.
Now, I don't use ketchup. I think ketchup is disgusting. Right. It's weird. Right. I like tomatoes, but I hate ketchup.
Right.
And I went and looked for the yellow mustard. I was pumped there was yellow mustard. It expired 1 year ago. You people are playing with one-year-old mustard.
Does mustard ever really expire, though? Really?
It says... It doesn't even say sell by July of 2017. It says use by July of 2017, which really means that even if you give it a couple extra months, we're still 6 months overdue. Do you ever clean out the fridge?
I've never cleaned.
Usually a year or two buffer on that.
No, but if you look to the left, I have a collection of packets of mayo and mustard just in case. I have no idea how old they are, but I don't care.
I don't care about a lot of that stuff either, but year-old condiments, I think I'll pass on those.
Especially mayo.
Look how Brady's bent out of shape about that, but when I get healthy stuff into the vending machine, it's like I'm some type of nut. Hey, what do we need that for? God forbid we should have yellow mustard expire a year early or something like that.
And by the way, Arnie, an update on the vending machine. I went down there to get some M&Ms, of course, today. Yeah. There are all the things that we want are gone. Of course, they're gone because we want them, so we buy them. But all of your crappy stuff, all your healthy, you know, oats and tree bark. And I mean, I just can't even believe it. None. I don't think a single one of them have been purchased by anyone.
You will eat it and like it.
Not
damn
a chance.
It.
No, it failed. Geez. And not only that, but you went to the president of the vending company.
Yes,
demanded this stuff. And nobody wants it, including you.
I'm still working on the video games to get into the place. No, I'm serious about that. I'd like to get some video games in there.
The eSports League.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we got a lot to get to. We got on late. Red Sox just ran a little bit late. Not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Brady, tell everybody what's coming up this week and what's coming up today.
Well, remember, mistake of the day. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. You want to win that 101.3 ESPN. Limited edition it is, baseball cap, thanks to Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. And Rich, you had a blast at trivia yesterday. I heard the place was very, very full.
It was rocking, absolutely, and they were all there to play trivia, which made me happy. They weren't just people going, who are you and what are you doing? So it was great. It was great. And Beth, Arnie's saintly bride, I don't know what else to call her. She has to be, was on a kick about certain subjects on all four of the rounds. She had been asked to do a Shakespeare question by a bunch of...
Yeah, how did that work out?
Good. There was a Shakespeare question in every single round, and the four young ladies that asked for Shakespeare for this week were very happy because they got all of them.
So, I couldn't even take four guesses.
No.
And I couldn't make up four guesses.
And you know what I had to do for a couple of them? I had to read from Shakespearean plays.
So, like, Hamlet.
For art thou, blah, blah. It's the most... I can't imagine a bigger... I'm going to catch hell for this. A bigger waste of time in my lifetime than being forced to pay attention to the William Shakespeare.
Charles Dickens was the worst.
We'd sit there through these endless things. I had no idea what anyone was talking about. And the whole time, I just wanted to be on the radio. I'm 8 years old, and I'm like, why do I have to endure this?
I don't care what anyone says. Great Expectations by Charles Dickens was the biggest waste of my life. And I didn't read most of it. I used the Cliff's Notes online at that point because it was just so unbearable. Yeah. I remember it being creepy. I remember it being long. I remember it being incomprehensible because it was creepy and long. And it was just a gigantic waste. That was the worst book I've ever read.
Well, teachers on the Town Fair Tire text line to those two knuckleheads.
Yeah, come on, Shakespeare.
802-655-6672.
I mean, Arnie, what's your experience with William Shakespeare? I think you were on stage with him once, weren't you?
But I was on stage with him. And you know what? I think I did study him. But if I got an F, that shows you how much I know about Shakespeare. Do you remember any of the questions? I don't know if I could even muster up an answer for any of the questions.
One answer was Macbeth. That was the longest. What was the longest Shakespeare play? I think it was Macbeth.
I remember Hamlet being good. I thought Hamlet was good.
I couldn't possibly tell you the difference between any of them. Hey, all right, what was the shortest Shakespeare novel or whatever it's called, play?
Whatever it's called.
This is an obscure one.
Much Ado About...
No, Comedy of Errors, which I've never heard of.
So I'm 0 for 2.
Yeah. I mean, I just remember we'd go on field trips. I'd be like, yes, a field trip. We get out of the class. We're going to go to the Shakespearean tent over in Westwood or something. It's like, no! Am I alone in this?
Said, for you, Brady, Eric and Fletcher said he hates tomatoes, but he loves ketchup. So I think he's opposite of you.
Yes, I hate ketchup. I don't know what it is. I think ketchup, the minute I smell it, I just want to get sick. The minute I smell
so
ketchup,
weird.
I just want to get sick. Pickles are the same. Pickles and ketchup are disgusting.
I wouldn't eat a tomato if you gave me $100, but I'll eat endless spaghetti sauce. Isn't that tomato sauce?
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Yes, I love spaghetti sauce. I love tomato sauce. And I'll eat cherry tomatoes. I'll eat tomatoes on sandwiches. I'll eat tomatoes on a burger. I think it's delicious. Ketchup, ugh.
That's so weird.
Something wrong with you guys. Something wrong with you boys out there. No doubt about that. All right, we ready to roll? Where do you want to start things off, Brady? Let's go. But big Red Sox victory. I want Mookie Betts traded to my New York Mets. I don't even know where to start there.
Well, Mookie Betts, three homers in a Sox win. Again, they just beat the Royals 5-4, and that comes on the heels of last night's extra inning marathon affair in which they lost. So a good rebound win on getaway day for the Sox. Arnie, lots of things to take away. One, Mookie Betts is incredible. He's got another three-homer game. He now has the most three-homer games of any Red Sox, 14 of them in his career passing Ted Williams.
And he's 25. He's 25, and he broke Ted Williams' record.
He is just amazing, and I can't believe there's some dope on this show keeps saying, they should move him out of the leadoff spot. They should move him out of the leadoff spot. You know, technically, any other team would have him batting, third, right?
Bryce Harper hit leadoff yesterday, and so did Anthony Rizzo.
And Harper's not kidding.
Yeah, well, that just shows you things have changed, and no longer do you put the speedster up on top of the lineup and see if he's going to get a single and steal a base and stuff like that. I mean, he's just tremendous. And, you know, I do have to question, though, just a baseball thing, Brady, and you would know better than that, and Rich, you'd probably know. Didn't Duffy give up the third home run? It was, what, the top of the seventh? Why would you allow him to pitch in the top of the seventh in a crucial situation like that? I'd say, hey, he's already hit two home runs off you. Why don't we try somebody else in this situation, or am I wrong on that?
No, it was the bottom of the seventh, and he ended
up. I think
that was his 111th pitch. So, well, yeah, but that's not a crazy amount. I mean, maybe they wanted to save the bullpen a little bit. They only used two pitchers today. It was interesting because both Pomerantz and Duffy got hit around a little bit, but Pomerantz did it in the early going.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a new habit against bad teams for Red Sox pitching. They give up between one and three runs in the first three innings, and then the bats come back and save them.
Yeah.
The other thing, Arnie, is remember this team played 13 innings yesterday, and the Royals
right.
used a lot of pitchers, as did the Red Sox. Neither one of them wanted to overload their bullpen. You could have seen a situation where Pomerantz could have been out after three innings if he doesn't get that
right.
double play ball with the bases loaded early in that game, and it keeps it at the time was 3-0. But if that game had gotten opened up to 5 or 6-0, you don't know where this bullpen would have been on the Sox side.
Royals
are looking to keep Duffy out there as long as possible to save their pen too.
Right, but I mean he did give up two home runs already to Mookie yeah. Betts.
And
I mean,
three overall.
And you're already in, and you're already in the seventh inning. I mean, geez, I don't know if even if he doesn't hit a home run, you think he's got his number there? You certainly, if the bullpen was rested, you certainly would not have had him in there to begin with. No ifs, ands, or buts about that.
Yep.
So I was just a little shocked. That turned out to be the game winner.
Yeah, and I mean, we've been talking about their bullpen. That was, you know, in the preseason, that was a thing that was certainly a concern, certainly to you, Brady. You talked about that bullpen as your number one concern. I mean, Joe Kelly, as much as he stunk on opening day and gave that win away against Tampa,
yes.
He has been almost unhittable since then. As he came back from his suspension, he went another inning, scoreless inning, two strikeouts. Barnes comes in, gives up a home run to Cuthbert, and then it was good to see Kimbrel come back, and I guarantee you he was all over Alex Cora after blowing his first save opportunity out of his last 17 last
yeah.
night. Said, you are putting me in this game. I'm fine. Get me in there. And sure enough, he comes in and strikes out the side.
I don't like watching Drew Pomeranz pitch, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
I really don't.
Yeah.
And I'm all for pitching backwards because that's how I had to pitch because I threw slow. But to look at a major league pitcher who could throw the ball 91 miles an hour, just have to rely over and over and over and over again on that curveball. I don't know how he won 17 games last year. Again, it's not that he's bad, but for a guy who is so dependent on one pitch, it just feels like he should be out of the game in the fifth every single night.
Brady, early candidate for mistake of the day, Tyler in Williston.
Yes, correct.
Mookie has 4 3 home run games out 14.
Yes, so
I
said.
Like, wow, that. Oh, did you correct that? I'm sorry.
No. I said 14, but it is 4.
Yeah.
Well, that
yeah,
would be quite a feat at age 25. Yeah.
Yes, it would. So, yes,
yeah.
mistake.
I was like, 14 seemed a lot to me, you know.
Arnie, every once in a while, you got to plant one for the audience.
Oh,
you know?
Is that what it was?
Yes, okay. Well, good. That was nice of you.
And very subtle.
Very nice to you. Very. By the way, this was a typical Red Sox win, was it not? Get
yes.
down 3-0.
I just said that.
Yeah, well, fight your way back. But not only that, not only fight your way back, though, they give up that home run. And I'm like, oh, they're easily going to go ahead and tie this thing up. And boom, they shut it down with Kimbrel. I'm starting to think, do you have to pay Kimbrel all that money that he's going to demand? Isn't he a free agent after this year, Brady, or not?
Yes.
Wow. I'm curious to see how much he's going to demand because you're going to have to give Mookie Betts. You're going to have to open up that thing real
yes.
soon. You can't keep him, even though he's got, what, how many years left? You got to show some good faith there because if you don't, I'd be pretty upset if I was him, that's for sure.
You've got Bogarts, you've got Bradley, you've got Betts, and then all of them are going to be coming up within in successive years. So there's a lot of money to give there. You've still got to pay Chris Sale, who's only got now this year and one more
yep.
in Boston. You're going to want to keep him around. As long as David Price doesn't opt out, which we don't think that he will, he's going to continue to eat up big money. JD Martinez, if he continues to opt back into his deals, he's going to get big money. So
wow,
it's hard to pay Kimbrel. Yes, you would want him, but he's going to be a 30-year-old closer. And then you start looking at what is he going to command. You got to think, he's going to be one notch below the Aroldis Chapman, Kenley Jansen, 5 years, $90 million range.
Already Derek and Middlebury. Don't pay him. Don't pay a closer. Sox have been fine year to year finding one. I mean, it's good to have a shutdown guy like that. No ifs, ands, or buts. But You don't like that, Rich?
No, I'm just saying he's so automatic. If there's anybody that would deserve an insane salary, it's probably him. What is he, 29?
Yes, he's going to be 30.
Throwing a lot of pitches in that arm, though.
Yeah. Well, somebody, not every, can everybody get the money? Somebody's got to be cut from that thing. I mean, not everybody can get the 90, the 100 mil or 150 mil. Somebody's going to have to say goodbye too, don't you? Or is everybody going to get their money?
Well, I think Bradley is going to be someone who's not back. I would have to imagine that when his time comes up. Now, again, we don't know how much he's going to be worth on the open market. Would that, so if the price was right, would they want him back? I bet. But if you start talking 50 million plus for a guy who can't hit and is getting older and is a defensive first center fielder, I don't know that the Sox are going to go that high, but that's all speculation at this point.
And if we're going to talk about people that aren't hitting, is there any concern about the catcher's offense on this team? I know lot of teams. I mean, it's an absolute automatic out right now with their two catchers. I mean, Sandy Leon goes 0 for 3 today. He's down to 118. I know he had a game-winning hit the other day. And Vasquez, well, last time I checked, he was hitting 370. I looked this morning, he's hitting about 150. I mean, you got to go 0 for a lot to drop that quickly.
I know you're like, okay, we're hitting, so it really doesn't make a difference. But, I mean, number 8 and number 9 in the lineup, between the two of them, not even batting their weight. I mean, geez.
Yeah, Bradley.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, Bradley's hitting 188. He had another 0 for today. So you're right. I mean, there are definitely – everything right now, you just look at the box score today. It's all or nothing with this team. I mean, you got Betts, Hanley, Martinez, and Bogarts all hitting way over 300. But everybody else is 240, 188, 118. I mean, there's a lot of holes in the lineup right now. But you know what? It's pretty hard to complain when your team is 22-8.
And, Arnie, I disagree with what Derek in Middlebury says. He says the Red Sox have been fine finding a closer year to year. That's not necessarily true. If you go back until 2004, they had Keith Foulke for 2 years, who they acquired, who had been a closer with the White Sox and I believe the A's previous to the Red Sox. If it wasn't previous, then he was with the A's after Boston, but he was definitely with the White Sox beforehand. He had been a proven closer. Then you had Papelbon for a six-year run, so maybe you found him out of nowhere, but you kept him for 6 years. It wasn't year to year.
Wasn't he a starter first, though, for them? Or?
I don't know. No matter where you found him, they kept him for 6 years. He wasn't a year-to-year guy. Then you look at, they had Koji Uehara, who maybe, again, you picked up maybe out of nowhere, but he still had a 3-year run. They're not going closer by committee year to year, okay? They're having some consistency at that position.
No, but if you were going to replace one spot, you'd have to say it was the closer. I mean, right now, how many years Mookie Betts has left, but if all these people are coming up, when do you show good faith? You know, the Angels, did they show good faith to Trout like a year or two early and said, you know, let's tear this thing up, or they add an extension or whatever it was? You gotta get ready. You gotta start with Mookie Betts and work your way down, and then with everybody else. But it starts with him. And if there's not enough money at the end, it's got to be Kimbrel, the closer, because you want everybody else. Look, I know Jackie Bradley Jr. is going to be gone, but you're going to have to make another move also. You'll save money on him, but you got to save some more money also.
Yeah, and it was weird with Mookie, too. I think a lot of people, myself included, I talked about it preseason, were a little bit concerned about his average dropped precipitously. How's that for a word?
Wow, last year. Word.
I didn't even read it. I actually said it right, and I'm not going to try to spell it. But my point being, I mean, his average went down like 45, 50 points last year. His RBIs went down only a little bit. I think he had 6 or 7 less home runs. But you kind of said, is this guy what he was, or is this going to continue? And I think he's come out of the gate this year proving that you'd better sign him long-term pretty quick.
Arnie, difference is that Mookie Betts, unlike Mike Trout, has shown zero interest in an early extension. He has said no to those overtures. He is okay playing year-to-year under arbitration. He's making $10.5 million right now. He's going to make arbitration again next year, and he's going to get massive.
Not a lot of money. Is that a lot of money, $10.5 million for somebody like him? What's Trout making per year? Please.
Well, Trout signed a team-friendly 6-year deal worth like $140 million, which sounds like a lot, but when you consider what Trout is worth now. But the thing with Betts is he's making $10.5 million now. When he goes through arbitration again, then he's going to be 1 year and $15 million, and then he's going to be 1 year and $22 million. And so, yes, per year they're going to be high-value deals.
Yeah, when is he going to stop taking away the 1 year, because knock wood, God forbid he gets hurt? I mean, you want to get that 4 or 5 year deal signed, right? I mean, he's 25, so right now is the time, 25 to 30, nice 5-year deal worth – gosh, I'm shaking just thinking, what, $125 to $150 million for somebody like him? They're going to have to pay that. Think about that for a second. $125 to $150 million for 5 years, and that's going to have to come quick. So
more than that, Artie. You're not even in the neighborhood.
I'm giving him $30 million a year, Brady.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, for a guy who's 25, if he's going to sign a deal now, he's the kind of guy you give an 8-year deal to, and it better be pushing more than $200.
Wow. Well, somebody got to go.
I agree.
Somebody's got to
agree.
Go.
I agree. But remember, we were talking in the middle of the winter about Mookie going back to the arbitration table and how the Red Sox are crazy for doing that. This is a dangerous game they're playing with him. And sure enough, he's top three in everything in the league, playing great defense. Oh. He's got the speed, and they'd better be careful with him.
Yeah, what could the Yankees offer him? Oh, we want to get into that now, huh? All right, when we get back, somebody from the Jets talking a little smack about the Patriots. I love it. That's next. Rolf and Flagg, you're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Thank you for making us a part of your afternoon routine. People of planet Earth, we appreciate you. The huddle is back right here on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. By the way, coming up in hour number two, Buster Olney, as we have him on every week. And also in hour number two, Martin St. Louis. Did I say that right? Did I throw the accent in there?
Is
that
good
there?
Yes, you did. And I wouldn't even throw you under the bus like Rich threw me under the bus yesterday.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, he's not going to let me forget that.
I said Martin St. Louis. You know, I just kind of blend that all in there.
Or you could say the ditzy girls who introduced him when he won the Lady Bing trophy about 10 years ago is Martin St. Louis. Seriously, you should look that up sometime. It's pretty funny.
You got to pull that. You got to find that. I would love that.
Martin St. Louis.
Wait. Who in the NFL draft, the guy's name was, what, Harold? Was that it? What they called him Honor or something like that. I'm just like, what are you reading?
By the way, the NFL draft needed to clean up its act. That if today were Thursday, the NFL draft people would be my clean up their acts. With all these like fan announcers of the picks and these team legends, like these guys' names got butchered, and this is supposed to be the best moment of their life.
Well, wouldn't you get it like 5 minutes early, so wouldn't you say, hey, I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name. Can you help me out here?
Exactly.
You know, can you just say it once for me, maybe twice, so I know what the hell I'm talking about? And walking up there, unbelievable. All right, get to the Jets wide receiver, because I think this is right up my alley, but go ahead, Brady.
Quincy Enunwa, he's a Jets wideout, as you said. Well,
a good wideout, too, yeah.
He says the Patriots are, quote, vulnerable, and the Jets are, quote, capable of knocking them off. And then he doubled down on it, saying, I think they might be vulnerable. I also think that we're capable of finally dethroning them. I think we always have been. It's just about getting over that hump of finishing games, not to add more bulletin board material for them. But I think for us, we're hyper-confident, and I believe we can do that.
Okay, we talked about this last year because somebody from the Dolphins guaranteed it, right? Who was
it? It was Jarvis Landry.
Right, Jarvis Landry of the Dolphins. So now it's him this year with the Jets wide receiver. Next year, are we going to guess who it's going to be from the Bills? That's going to say that the Patriots are vulnerable? He has a point only because Vegas also says it, that they've gone from a 12.5 over on their win total down to 11. But that's a lot of teams in the NBA. There's only five teams that have over on the win totals of double figures. Obviously, the Patriots are one of them. The Patriots are the favorites for winning the Super Bowl this year, according to Vegas. But they are vulnerable because the division is better. You know, the Jets are going to be better, though. You know, it's probably going to take a little bit of a time, but they'll probably be more competitive, though. They did decently last year. The Bills made the playoffs, and hoping the Jets, or excuse me, the Dolphins, who took one game, so they'd have to take it again. So I think the Patriots, you know, maybe the division's still theirs for the taking, but they are a little vulnerable.
I mean, you know my answer to this. The worst team in the division dethroning the best team in the conference. If this came from Miami or Buffalo, but especially Buffalo, I'd be like, okay, but first of all, what is this guy going to say? You know, with a microphone stuck in his face, how do you think you're going to do next year? I don't know. I'd really love to finish third.
Oh,
that would be awesome.
Yeah. Oh, and
I mean, as long as Brady and Gronk are upright, especially Brady, it's not going to happen. Granted, it's going to happen sooner than later, but the Jets have, what the Jets need to do is just start putting themselves back in the right direction, and you'd think Sam Darnold might be that.
I'm okay with him saying it because we say all the time we just want guys to be honest and we hate cookie cutter answers and we don't have to agree with it. I think it's a comment I wouldn't have made. I think it's fair to say that the Jets are improving. I think it's fair to say that they have some structure in place. They signed a new running back in Thomas Rawls who fell out of favor in Seattle, but I still think he's a capable runner and I think he's a good runner for the AFC East. And then you throw in Anunua coming back, who had been injured in his career. Jermaine Kearse had a good year at wide receiver. They made some other moves there, especially getting Sam Darnold. That's a young secondary that's improving. I do think Todd Bowles is a capable head coach because he coaches up the defense. I think it's fair to say they're improving, but no, I don't think it's fair to say that they're going to jump over three teams. So I wouldn't have said it, but again, we don't want guys to be cliche and cookie cutter, so yeah, I have exactly. to appreciate it.
And when people and media plants questions like that, are you gonna be better than the Patriots? Are you gonna beat the Patriots? Anything involving the Patriots, you start out with your answer by saying the Patriots have been tough for a long time, and I'm sure they're gonna continue to be good. They present a great challenge, and blah blah blah. And I know that is cookie cutter answers, but the last thing you want to do is be the Jets and provide the New England Patriots with bulletin board material.
Are you providing them with bulletin board material on May 1st, though? I mean, is there such a thing?
Yeah, really, please.
I don't think they need to. It's the Jets and the Patriots right now. Pardon the cockiness, but I'm not worried about the Jets.
Arnie said NBA, not NFL. Brian in Richmond, mistake of the day. Arnie said NBA, not NFL. I didn't pick up on that. So we both just let that slip over our heads. So that's one of the mistakes.
No, I noticed it, but I don't throw my teammates under the bus.
Wow. Oh,
how long
away?
Does this go on for? All summer?
That actually wasn't a shot at you. I was saying. You said only five teams in the NBA had double-digit win totals.
Okay, I meant NFL. The Patriots have by far the easiest road in the Super Bowl. That won't change since all three division rivals are questionable. Quarterback, good job, fellas. Big Mike and McGillicuddy. That makes me the next question. If the Patriots don't win the division, which one of the three teams jumped up to win it because they had a great year? Who would I would probably – you know, I would say Buffalo would be the team that would upset them. If the Patriots didn't win the division, what do you think?
It's so funny because every time the Patriots go to Miami, they look like the Jets. I don't know what happens to them. Yeah. So, but other than that, things usually go pretty well for them. And so I want to almost say Miami, but then the Dolphins do something ridiculous and lose two or three games they shouldn't lose every season. Of course, they lost their quarterback, but he'll be back here this coming year. So I want to say Buffalo just record-wise from last year, but I really believe if Miami can get their bleep together here, they might be the team to come in.
I think it'd be Miami also, only because I have a real fear that the Bills are going to start Josh Allen at some point. I don't think he's ready to quarterback a 10-win playoff team.
Wow. You thought I'd say Miami, and I was the one that didn't. I maybe it was like reverse psychology there. I don't know. Get to the Bruins a little bit, Rich, because big game, my friend.
It is a big – I mean, it's game three. It's the swing game, really, for the whole series. Tampa wins this, and they have total control. So,
what's the stat on that? Like, teams that win a game three go on to win. How many, like – what, 70, 80%
of
the time?
I have no idea. You tell me, Brady.
Yeah,
you know that one. Brady.
I don't remember at the top. Yeah. All I remember is game five winners in a best of seven are like 80%. Yeah.
Well, it would be nice, though, because Tampa Bay really has outplayed the Bruins for the great majority. Not the great majority, but, like we said yesterday, a 6-2 win is a 6-2 win. But the Bruins poured it on for a fairly short period of time in game one. Tampa Bay outshot them by 12 in the game. And you saw what happened the other night in game two. The Bruins... It's just like the Celtics. I just feel like they need some home cooking. They need the garden roof to blow off tonight. And I feel good about it going in. Tuca's got to be Tuca. Well, I shouldn't say that. Tuca's got to be the good Tuca tonight. And you've got to stay out of the penalty box. You cannot give that Tampa top line any man advantages tonight. They will, obviously. You can't go penalty-less. Nah. But I mean... You just can't let those guys get out there.
And you have to convert on your opportunities. I mean, that two-man advantage that the Bruins had awful. In the first period of Game 2 that they weren't able to convert on, Charlie McAvoy scored the other day. He needs to continue to be comfortable. And we had said that he was going to be a big part of this series.
And turnovers. My goodness. That was I mean, they lost Game 2 for a lot of reasons, but one of the big ones was turnovers, and they were just dumb turnovers, you know, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, let me ask you this, because what was it in game number two, 10-0 early and shots on goal, right? Or something crazy like that. And I firmly believe you can't do both of this. What do you do to start game three? Do you come out and punish them and hit them like all hell and said, okay, we're going to be a physical game? Or do you try to go ahead, not be finesse, but put a lot of shots on goal so you don't get the same thing happen in game number two? Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, quick line changes, get everybody out there full of energy, let feed off the crowd and get that first goal. And I know it's an old cliche, but that first goal when you're at home is huge.
I was going to read Shane and Burlington's text, but it's so damn long I can't read it at all, to be honest with
hang
you.
On.
He's basically saying that he enjoys the smack talk of the NFL draft. Remember what David Akers did this year, the old Eagles kicker, giving it back to the Dallas fans in Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of funny, wasn't it? I mean, you should win something before you talk smack, but I still think it was kind of funny.
Well, they did win something. The Eagles won the Super Bowl.
No, he didn't win anything, though. He's never won anything. Don't go off. Don't piggyback off them. You're a big zero, David Akers, aren't you, or what?
I thought it was way too much. Like, just read the picks, man. That's all I care about. Just read the picks.
I didn't know there was a comedy act to go with that. You think like 30 seconds to stand up, and you go ahead and read the picks out there. But yeah, I'm going with the Bruins, obviously. In game three, we'll see what happens. When we come back, though, Brady, I saw you tweet about this. This was unbelievable. I thought it was hysterical also. We'll get to that coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Everyone is listening to The Huddle. It's almost like we've got a quarter of a billion listeners per month. All right. This is The Huddle with Rich Hardy and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. Remember, Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Like Tristan Wilson says, Bruins need to stay out of the box. They really need to watch out for the Tampa players hitting themselves in the face with their own stick, causing the Bruins to be shorthanded. Yeah, that's not reviewable, was it, Rich?
No, and I'll tell you what, the NHL crew, I mean, Mike Milbury, obviously an ex-Bruin, but Jeremy Roenick, there was a bunch of guys really hammering on the ref in that game.
Well, that ties right into speaking about hitting yourself in the face. Well, I'd imagine with your own stick is going to hurt more. But Brady, what the heck happened here with the pitcher, Ken Giles? And by the way, it wasn't a full punch to the face. Let's not get too dramatic on
it. It was
this,
a pretty good right hook.
Yeah, but he already, his knuckles touched his chin, and he kind of pushed him a little bit. It wasn't like a full-fledged punch to the face, you know? Come on now.
Well, Astros closer Ken Giles, none too happy with giving up a three spot to the Yankees yesterday in the ninth, and then another run that came around, it was charged to him. So he gets charged with four runs. After he leaving the game yesterday, he was a little upset, screaming at himself. He kind of batted his chest, and then he punched himself right in the face.
Rich, you've done a lot of minor league games. I got to assume you've probably seen that something like that in the minor leagues, huh?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of crazy things in the minors, most of them off the field, though. Punching other people off the field. But, there's been a lot of weirdness over the last 24 hours. I mean, what about that out, the second out when Kimbrel was in there of the game today with the Royals for Kansas City in the top of the ninth? You got a one-run lead, nobody on base, one down. It's a 3-2 pitch, I think, way inside. And the guy swung at it, but the ball went all the way to the backstop. I assume he's going to go to first base, but we found out otherwise.
Yeah, Lucas Duda.
Yeah.
So this is kind of the weirdest things we've seen in baseball over 24 hours. So Giles punches himself in the face, and then Duda swings and misses at a pitch that hits him. And Rich still thinks he was going to go to first base on it. So I had to tell him, no, when it hits you, it's a dead ball, and you're out. And that's exactly what the call was.
You know what? I just haven't seen that, and I was just looking at it. We're sitting in his office watching it before we went on the air, watching the ninth inning, and the act of the swing happened before the ball hit his foot. And obviously that doesn't make any difference because the swing is what ends the play.
Well, getting hit makes the ball dead instantly.
Yeah, and wait then, a minute there, yeah.
No, I mean, that's what I meant, yeah.
When he gets hit, the ball is dead, but he swung and it hit him. So therefore, it's a swing and a miss and a dead ball. So therefore, basically, think about it this way. Had there been a runner on first base, that runner could not have advanced because the ball went to the backstop. Once it hits him, the ball is dead. Now nobody else can move. It is now a swing and a miss, and the ball is dead.
It's weird.
Let me ask you, if he swings and misses and it doesn't hit him and there's a runner on first but there's two outs, can he go to first base?
Yes.
Because he can't go to first base with less than two outs, though, right?
Yes, he can. Even though first base is occupied with two outs, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, less than two outs, you can't go, though, right?
Correct. And then there was the weird catcher's interference last night where Christian Vasquez got the ball, and he grabbed it with his – he pulled the ball over to him with his face mask, and they got called for catcher's interference for that, for the illegal equipment rule.
I did not see that.
That is so funny. Yeah. I didn't see that.
A lot of that game.
So there's so Carson Smith is pitching. It's the eighth inning, I think, and the ball in the dirt, and the ball goes under Vasquez's legs, and he just taps it to his front. He just reaches behind him with his mask, taps it to his front underneath his legs, and they gave him another base.
So you obviously can't you cannot use your face mask to get the ball?
Correct. Illegal equipment. So you can't catch the ball in your hat. You can't catch the ball in your shirt. You cannot use your We got to go to break, Arnie. We'll ask Buster.
Okay. Fascinating.
We'll ask Buster. What happens when you throw the mitt at the ball? We'll ask Buster.
Three bases. I know that answer.
Wow. All that coming up of a Brady update next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The local sports talk show. Nothing else comes close. Come to think of it, there isn't anything else. The Huddle, 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. You're in the Huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and you can always find us on the 101.3 ESPN app as well. Buster Olney just moments away from joining us. Brady and Rich in studio. Arnie out in Los Angeles. The Red Sox winners today over the Kansas City Royals. Drew Pomeranz gives that bullpen a much-needed shortened day going six innings. And, Rich, we got Buster?
Yes, and I did it all by myself.
You answered the phone all by yourself.
Wow.
Really good.
He may or may not be there.
Well, we're proud of you. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and see if Rich did, in fact, successfully answer the phone. Buster Olney, our ESPN MLB insider, with us now. Buster, how are you?
I'm doing great. And, yeah, he sounded so proud, kind of like I remember the first time I changed a tire. Like, it was like, yeah, okay, that's awesome. I answered the phone appropriately. Okay.
No, but in this place, you have to answer the phone and push a bunch of buttons like hold and you know. I haven't used a landline in 10 years. I forgot how to do it.
Yeah, and I haven't changed a tire in 20. So there you go.
I put together a desk a couple of months ago. That was the most like craftsy, manly thing I've done with tools and everything. So.
Yeah, and you were like Tom Hanks in that movie, Castaway.
Yes.
I have made fire!
Yes, that's exactly how I felt. Buster, let's start with a couple oddities we were just talking about. First off, have you ever seen anyone punch themselves in the face on the field like Ken Giles?
No. 100%, that is an absolute no. When you saw that, it was like, what the heck is going on? Look, he lost his closer's job during the postseason last year. They're trying to work him back in. He's actually pitched generally pretty well early this spring, but for that to have that happen in a big test against the Yankees in that series, you can understand why he was that frustrated.
And, Buster, how about what we saw last night in the Red Sox game? I can say this was a first for me. I know you're not allowed – like, if you catch the ball in your hat, I know that's a penalty. If you throw your glove at the ball, I know off the top of my head that's three bases. I cannot say I've ever seen the catcher use the face mask to just kind of push the ball to himself and get called for catcher's interference. I've never seen that.
I actually have, and I can't tell you where I've seen it. It might have actually been at Legion Ball in Vermont.
Wow.
And I remember that was the first time that I ever saw that. It was in Barry, now that I come to think of it.
Wow.
But I can't. I remember the catcher bending down and using his mask, and the umpire was all over it and made the right call, and I looked it up afterward. That's exactly right.
I can't believe a youth umpire actually got that right.
I was with you. I was 100% stunned.
And they said on the Red Sox broadcast that Joe Maddon had that happen to him with Tampa in 09. They said that was the last time that happened in Major League Baseball.
Wow. Yeah, that's a call that doesn't get made very often. There was actually one last week, which I had never seen before in the Cincinnati game when there was an attempted steal of third base, and the catcher came up throwing. And as he reached back with his arm to make the throw, he came up and he knocked the home plate umpire's mask to the side, and the home plate umpire called interference on himself.
Wow!
And sent the runner back from third to second. I've never seen that call, and the home plate umpire called it immediately.
And then there's Lucas Duda striking out for out number two in the ninth this afternoon down at Fenway after he swings at a pitch nowhere near home plate, and it hits him in the foot and gets behind the catcher, and he thinks he can go to first, which I was... That was news to me that you couldn't.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah. What about Mookie Betts, Buster? I mean, you know, on and on it goes. He is now. I mean, you saw the numbers. What is it? Four.
He's got 4 3 homer games, Buster.
He just passed Ted Williams for that record, and he's 25.
Yeah, and he's, you know, 5'8" and 180 pounds, and he certainly doesn't look like someone who'd have that sort of milestone, for sure. I was texting back and forth just a few minutes ago with Alex Cora, the Red Sox manager who I worked with at ESPN, and just asked him about Mookie and what he's doing. And, you know, he made reference to a dinner that he had with Mookie on January 4th. This is after, you know, not long after Alex was named the manager, and they sat down in a restaurant, and he talked about, hey, we want you to be more aggressive early in the count. Be ready to swing from the first pitch, the second pitch. And early in spring training, he really struggled with that approach. As you guys remember, he had his long hitless streak at the outset of spring training. But then he's gotten in the groove. And as Alex just texted, you know, he is hunting strikes and looking to do damage from pitch one as opposed to sort of having that auto take on strike one. And he's doing damage.
Buster Olney, our ESPN MLB insider, with us every week at this time on the huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Buster, the Red Sox, you mentioned Alex Cora. He wasn't happy with their defense yesterday. I think it was 4 errors last night. Rafael Devers had a misplay today. You had said all along people are concerned about his defense at third base. Are you hearing any more rumblings about him not being so good defensively?
I have not specifically asked the same people follow-up questions in the last couple of weeks, but I will flat out tell you that folks with other teams, they determined in their eyes that he could not play third base on a regular basis defensively because he just doesn't, in their eyes, was just never going to be that adept to do that. And, you know, the Red Sox, maybe they'll live with it for a time. I know last year when we had this conversation about it, Red Sox people were telling me, no, we think he moves his feet well enough and he'll eventually adapt and he'll get in better shape. But he makes a lot of mistakes. He did last August and September. He is this early this season.
And I loved it, but I was very surprised at Alex Cora's press conference afterward using words like awful, terrible, this can't happen. I mean, is that okay to do? I love it, like I said, but when you're talking about a 20-year-old and a couple of 22, 23-year-olds?
I just tell you, you know, Alex is such a nice person that it's kind of like Dave Roberts, the manager of the Dodgers, that they're just super nice people, and that's, you know, it's not like he's walking around as the grumpy old man, get off my lawn in the clubhouse before games. I'm sure he's engaging with everybody, and he's probably very positive with them, and so I think he probably was just being honest with the media the way he was with the player. I think because of the context, because of the type of person he is, I think it just comes out differently. Now, I might be wrong. You know, I haven't asked Devers about it, and we know last year when Joe Girardi was pointed in his criticism of Gary Sanchez and benched him for a day, that was kind of the beginning of the end of Joe Girardi's time as the Yankees manager because players can be sensitive.
Buster, let's go to the Yankees now, and we'll talk about Sonny Gray for a second. I remember specifically you telling us last October that he did not pitch Game 5 of the ALDS because Yankees people thought he pitched too defensively. Those were your words. Now I look at it and say again, he's almost abandoned his fastball completely and is relying on his breaking ball. At first, I blamed that on him, and then I read something on Fangraphs that said the Yankees are kind of abandoning the fastball. Is that something you're hearing?
Yes. They're not abandoning it, but that whole premise, and it's interesting, part of the underlying shift in baseball is, you know, we all grew up with the premise that you pitch off your fastball. You know,
yes.
The most important pitch is a well-placed fastball. Well, Rich Hill, I think, expressed this better than anybody else. He, of course, a Massachusetts native who pitched with the Red Sox at the end of, 2015, 2016, had some real success. And he told me about conversations he had with Brian Bannister, who works in their front office. And Bannister said, look, if your best pitch is your curveball, which is the case in for Rich Hill, why not throw that the most instead of the fastball? And it kind of it blows up the mold that we all grew up with. And I'm seeing more and more pitchers do that where the feeling is, look, if your nastiest pitch is, you know, your slider, Patrick Corbin of the Diamondbacks is doing this. If your best pitch is a curveball, then throw that pitch. If that's the pitch that hitters can't hit, then go with that pitch. And I think the Yankees are following that premise.
And how much fun is that Yankees-Houston series been? And we're only 2 games in. I mean, Verlander was just ridiculous last night, completely unhittable. Montgomery goes out after 1 inning and know, I mean, they go bullpen by committee right from the start and one swing of the bat and it's over.
Yeah, and I just talked with an executive with another team who was saying to me that he thought the Yankees were good, and then he saw them in person, and he said, "Man, they are dynamic. Like, it is a powerhouse." And it does feel like that you have these two monster teams going at each other between the Astros and the Yankees this week. As you say, Verlander last night, just the movement on his stuff was incredible, and the Yankees lineup is gathering momentum. You know, between Gary Sanchez and Giancarlo Stanton settling in, and Aaron Judge, most of the time what we talk about with him is the fact he's so big and he hits long home runs. Guys, he is a technician at the plate. Like, his command of the strike zone is getting to be, like Joey Votto with the Cincinnati Reds, where you see umpires beginning to pause. Like, when he doesn't swing at a pitch, they're like, Judge didn't swing. Maybe it was a ball. that sort of thing. Ted Williams had that reputation. Aaron Judge is an absolute killer when it comes to commanding the strike zone and battling through each at bat.
You ever seen a more impactful 214 hitter than Gary Sanchez has been this season?
I know. Just getting absolute huge hits and gathering momentum. And, you know, whether it's CC Sabathia or Aaron Boone, a lot of folks in that Yankee organization say that, you know, between Judge and Stanton and Sanchez, the best pure hitter in terms of hitting the ball hard the most, they think Sanchez is that guy.
Buster Olney of ESPN joining us on the huddle as he does every Wednesday at this time on 101.3 ESPN. Buster, I got two questions for you. What did you think about Indians pitcher Trevor Bauer's comments that he thinks that pine tar or pitchers using foreign substances should be okay because he thinks all the other pitchers are doing it? Why shouldn't they just legalize it?
Yeah, well, and he's done a remarkable shift on this topic in about a month, okay?
Yeah.
Early last month, and he came out with a statement today and said, "I wasn't talking about the Astros. I didn't take anything away," which is ridiculous because when he first dove into this, it was clear he was taking shots at Gerrit Cole, who, by the way, was his college teammate at UCLA, and they weren't the best of friends. When Gerrit Cole got off to a great start with the Astros, Trevor was out there talking about how if you use pine tar, this is how you can increase your spin rate. And when I read that, my first thought was, this is like someone complaining about jaywalking. This is like someone complaining about drivers going 60 in a 55, because if you watch a game, and you guys watch games every day, you can see 8 to 10 pitchers in just about every game now who are using foreign substances. If you look at the gloved hand of most pitchers in baseball these days, they have that shaved area below their wrist, and it's all shiny. That's because they got sunscreen on it. Major League Baseball is fully aware of this. Umpires are totally aware of it. The managers, the hitters, everybody knows this is happening. So I don't know why Trevor started to make an issue of this last month. My question is, not whether or not pitchers are cheating. Hundreds are, by the letter of the law. My question would be, why wouldn't you use pine tar given the current culture? And oh, by the way, last week I had a conversation with a really prominent hitter in the American League who told me, I'd rather they use the pine tar if they can command the ball as opposed to having these slippery baseballs.
Buster, the other thing, we've talked a lot about tanking this year. Seven teams are on pace to lose 100 games or more, which is incredible.
Yep.
I want to ask this because I don't know the answer. In the NFL, they require you over a four-year span to spend 89% of your salary cap so that at least you can have the appearance of spending money to be competitive. Does baseball have any required bottom dollar you have to spend on your roster, and should they put in a mandatory requirement?
Yes, they should, and no, they don't have a rule. For example, this is either 2012 or 2013 when the Astros were really god-awful. They finished one season, guys, in which they had one player making over $1 million on their entire roster. The Philadelphia Phillies, who could easily sustain a $150 million payroll. They cut back in terms of the players who were actually on the field for them, something in the range of $50 to $60 million. It has become a big problem in baseball. And here's the, people say, well, it's not a guarantee that you're going to pick the best players if you tank. Yeah, that's true. But it's a no-lose situation, guys, because if you're a general manager, let's say you're Derek Jeter, and you go to your owners and you say, okay, we're going to slash our payroll by $50 million, we're going to cut it to the bone, we're going to trade away all the good players. Best case scenario is we get the number one pick or number two pick, and we get a superstar like a Chris Bryant, a Bryce Harper. Worst case scenario is You guys make a lot of money.
Yeah.
So it's a two-pronged reason for doing this, and it's a problem. And I've mentioned this to you guys before. It was a shock to me that the union didn't ask for any adjustments with the tanking in the last CBA negotiations. It was a huge mistake, and privately, there are people in baseball on management side who absolutely were prepared to get into those conversations, but the union didn't bring it up.
Wow. And Buster, I mean, you talk about a team heading in the other direction after some down years. I mean, the Atlanta Braves, I was here in, 2019. Just wait till you see this team in about 2019, 2020. Well, it's 2018. They're six games over 500, and all those 20- and 21-year-olds are playing very well. Are they real right now?
They are 100% real, and I will tell you that I happen to see a lot of Braves game because my 13-year-old son, who's weird like I was, rooting for the Lakers and Dodgers growing up in central Vermont, his favorite team are the Braves. And so we see them play a lot. The top two guys in their lineup now, Ozzie Albies, their second baseman, and Ronald Acuña Jr., that superstar prospect who came up last week, it's breathtaking to watch those two guys run. And they put the ball in play. They have power. They have speed. Last night, and I know you guys probably don't get the Mets broadcast up there, but to hear Keith Hernandez, like, he was, like, cheering as these guys are running the bases, like, wow, look at that. He could not believe how fast these two guys are, and they're hitting in front of Freddie Freeman, and it is absolutely a dynamic lineup. It's going to be fun to watch for the next, hopefully, next 10 to 12 years. If they get any kind of pitching, absolutely there for real. And by the way, if they win tonight, they'll be in first place in the month of May for the first time since 2014.
Unbelievable. Rich, we ask all the questions for the listeners. I'm asking one for me here. Buster, you mentioned the Braves, and they brought up the pitcher yesterday, Soroka, who made his first career start. I got him stashed in a fantasy baseball prospect league. Should I bring him up? Is he here to stay, or is that a spot start?
After what we saw last night, I suspect he's going to get a lot of action in the big leagues. Privately, the Braves will tell you that while some other pitching prospects in the organization have more hype, they think he's the best guy. If you watched him pitch last night, he looks like he's playing catch in the backyard, and he's throwing 94 miles an hour, and the ball's cutting all over the place. I mean, you talk about easy velocity. Dave O'Brien does a great job covering the Braves for Atlanta Journal-Constitution, tweeted out a little while ago that the Braves need some clarification on a couple of situations with other starting pitchers before they make up their minds what they're going to do with him. He looks like he's the real deal.
Well, Buster, we'll let you go on this. We'll watch the Braves tonight. You pay attention to the Mariners because I've already got Edwin Diaz winning the Cy Young and Mitch Haniger the MVP. You wait and see.
As I've been saying on my podcast, I picked the Mariners to win the World Series a couple years ago. I picked them to make the playoffs like three straight years. You're not pulling me onto that bandwagon. I'm sorry, Brady. I'm not going there.
Buster, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
Thanks, Buster.
I don't pick the Mariners either. I'm just jumping at the fact that they're six games over for the first time in what feels like 20 years.
They're actually making it worth staying up till 2 in the morning every week.
I know. I did. We bring Arnie back into the conversation
now. Let me ask you a question. I want to ask if so many pitchers are cheating, and he said hundreds, why couldn't, and I'll ask the simple question, why shouldn't I use the cork bat if I'm a batter then?
Look, I disagree with Trevor Bauer. I don't think that this should be done. I guess your point is well taken that if everyone's cheating on the pitcher's side, then why don't cheat on the hitter's side? I think pitchers look at it as, well, you guys cheated for so long with the steroids, now it's one for us. But I don't think that that's the right way to look at it either.
No, but I mean, I don't even know if a cork bat really even helps you that much to begin with. But I mean, if so many pitchers are doing that, Rich, you know better than I. Who would it was not Phil Niekro, but Gaylord Perry.
Oh, I mean, notorious. The spitball.
Spitball, yep. Vaseline.
Yeah, right under his visor. I mean, he didn't try to hide it very well.
No.
Just went out there and put his finger on his visor every pitch.
Yeah, so somebody like him certainly was like the king of that. All right, when we get back, though, we'll get a little bit more into the Bruins and the Red Sox before we get to Martin St-Louis coming up later on. All that is in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Golic and Wingo when you drive in, and the huddle when you drive home. And you can always be part of the show by calling or texting at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Let's go!
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. It's a Wednesday, getting you through this hump day. We're into May. You guys are having some damn good weather out there, so good for you guys. What is it, like 80 or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah,
what is it out there?
For one day. The rain's supposed to, as we were just hearing, it's supposed to arrive tonight, tomorrow, maybe Friday. But the weekend looks pretty good. What's doing out there, the usual?
No, yesterday and today are a bit chilly, like 60, 65 degrees. Not too sunny, but tomorrow and the rest of the week and the whole rest of the time I'm out here, it's going to be sunny and like 82 to 85 degrees. So I'm going to be the bronze god when I come back.
Of course.
Yeah, looking all good.
Chiseled, yes.
Chiseled and everything.
What do weather people do out there? I mean, San Diego, L.A., it's just the same thing every single day. Are they all like Ron Burgundy to make it interesting?
Earthquakes.
Earthquakes.
40% chance of a major earthquake today.
You have
today.
To follow the fault lines, the San Andreas fault.
One weather guy is I don't know if he's a former comedian, or I guess once you're a comedian, you're always a comedian. So one weather guy is a comedian, and, you know, I think they have Dallas Rains and Fritz Coleman.
Yeah. Sounds like a porn star.
Arnie, Rich was laughing through the entire break because we're having Martin St. Louis on in about 15 minutes. So, the Stanley Cup champ, Olympic champ, former Catamount, he won a major award, and this is how it was presented to him.
Martin St. Louis.
So Rich was laughing.
I just think that's so funny. These two women get up there and have absolutely no idea who he is.
Martin St. Louis.
What a position to put him in as he comes up in his million-dollar suit to get his award.
You know, that reminds me, we had some models on one of my buddies' show, John Renshaw, and it was Tampa against Green Bay. And, you know, you say Battle of the Bays, and he goes, you guys want to take a guess on where the teams are? And one girl goes, Montego Bay? And I mean, yes, you got it. That's exactly right, Montego Bay against Green Bay. That's the big game today. Brady, the Bruins are going – they're not going to Montego Bay, but they're going to China, aren't they? Yeah.
Yes, next season the Bruins are playing a pair of exhibition games against the Calgary Flames in China as part of an initiative to continue to grow the sport of hockey. So September 15th and September 19th, the Bees and the Flames from China.
Yeah, not too crazy about extending all-out trips like that in the preseason, though I guess it's better than the regular season, and you do want to expand the game and all that. And I know they have clinics over there, so I think it's good. You just want to make sure that your veterans don't get too tired. I don't even know how long the trip is, but it's certainly not right around the corner, so you don't want to get too burnt out, you know?
No, my first thought as a Bees fan was, oh, no, are they going to lose home games? That's the way I always think with these international trips, and then I found out it was preseason, and it's like, okay, expand the reach of the Bruins franchise. I don't know if it's going to help them in any other way except the almighty dollar. But, I mean, as long as it looks like they're going to have a lot of time off, too. One of the games is on a Saturday, September 15th. The other game against the Flames is on Wednesday, September 19th. And I would assume they'll have, like, 4 or 5 days before and 4 or 5 days after. So it'll be a good experience for them. As long as it's preseason, who cares?
I think that it's – I don't want to say it's pointless because not that – look, China's got a billion people in it, okay? There are massive growth potential in China, and it's a hockey market right now that, to my knowledge, is relatively non-existent. I mean, I know South Korea and North Korea had a combined team in the Olympics, so, I mean, there's an Asian presence in hockey, but I don't know about what China's viability is in hockey right now. But I'd rather see them try to continue to grow the game in the U.S., and I know that sounds shallow, but when we start talking about hockey, is hockey more popular in the U.S. than it is in Canada, Russia, Sweden? I don't know that it is. So why not go play more we were talking about, Rich, trying to get the preseason game to be played at Middlebury.
Yeah.
Why not do small town tours for these NHL games and play more games here in the U.S.? If hockey is behind football, basketball, and baseball by a wide margin, as everyone says that it is, why not try to go to rural America and grow it there?
Right, but my phone's ringing. Hang on, let me get rid of that.
That's inappropriate.
I thought I turned the thing off. You know why? Because they're going to China they're going to make insane amounts of money, and then they're going to merchandise like crazy. You know how much merchandise they're going to sell to China? The Bruins with their black and yellow. And, I mean, going to Middlebury, Vermont is probably not the answer to make a whole lot of money for Jeremy Jacobs.
But if we're go ahead, Arnie.
Well, who does it better, Brady? The NFL going to London or Mexico City, the NBA. Where did they go? They have regular season games in Oh. I forget where they had played the regular season. I know they had gone.
They had one in South America.
Okay. Now you got the NHL doing this. And baseball, they had games in Cuba, right? And
They had games in Cuba last year. Yeah. The Mariners and A's are going to open up in Japan next year.
Wow. So, I mean, who does it better, I guess, no, really?
You don't have to. I mean, but with Cuba and all these places, they played in Puerto Rico a couple weeks ago, the Indians and the Minnesota Twins. But, I mean, you don't have to sell to those markets. I mean, China's a whole different ballgame as far as trying to sell the product.
I mean, think about this, though, Arnie. Football, basketball, and baseball are already massively popular here in America.
Yes.
Those sports are, not to say that there's no growth in America, but those sports are tapped out in terms of how much bigger can they get in America. So it makes more sense to go over and market the game overseas. Think about it this way. Soccer is the biggest sport in the world, but it's not that big in the U.S. If you told me that some of the Premier League teams were going to come over here and play in Boston or New York, you'd draw a massive crowd, and that would be a bigger win for soccer in the U.S., where soccer is not that big. I consider this the same thing. I'd rather just see hockey get bigger here. It's the fourth sport by a wide margin. Why not continue to try to grow it here at the grassroots level and get younger kids playing it?
Or maybe they feel that's the only way they can grow it is to go international. Maybe they feel there's not going to be a lot of growth here in the United States, though I completely disagree, because you see, like, Nashville, now it seems like more kids will want to play hockey there. You've seen the what's going on in Vegas. And, I mean, of course, the West Coast with Los Angeles and Anaheim and San Jose. I mean, it's just been fantastic with what's been going on with the growth. So you would think they could grow it here in the United States, but maybe they don't feel they can. Yeah. I don't know.
It's been fantastic at times, mostly, obviously, in Vegas because it's brand new. And Nashville has been a recent phenomenon for the last 4 or 5 years because they've been really good and continue to be. And it's just a three-ring circus every game there. But that you mentioned those places, but you've also got the Arizonas and the Floridas
and the
Carolina Hurricanes.
And Atlanta, right. That didn't work.
Right. Twice they tried in Atlanta, and it didn't work. And, Columbus, to a point, when they're winning, they do well. But there are a lot of markets that aren't doing well.
Well, let me ask you this, but they've talked about – and, Brady, I forget who you asked. Can they get a second team and support a second team in Montreal?
That was yesterday, Arp and Basu. Yeah.
Can they support a second team in Boston? I mean, look at football. They have the Jets and the Giants. Can there be the Bruins and somebody else? Or is that in Los Angeles, you got the Clippers and the Lakers. You got the 49ers and the Raiders. Can you support two teams in hockey in Boston?
I would say no. I mean, I mean.
What? You got the Devils, Boston, the Rangers, the Islanders.
Boston, believe it or not, metropolitan Boston, I understand, is a major media market. Boston itself is about the size of Vermont, population-wise. And it's not a huge place. I don't think Boston is the answer. It's a hockey mad town, but so are a lot of other places. And I just don't think the population base is there. Where are they going to play?
Arnie, your wife gets in on the Town for Tire text line. She makes a good point.
Wow.
There is a lot of growth in hockey development in China, and I think the next Winter Games are there. So maybe that has something to do with it.
Oh, look at that, huh?
Maybe you should send Shea there, goaltend for a while.
Do something like that. We're getting a lot. Read what Frank is writing in, and John, too, because they're coming too fast for me, Brady.
John in Charlotte says that the Premier League Soccer does play some preseason matches here in the U.S. Check out the International Champions Cup. Liverpool, Manchester United, Barcelona, several other huge European clubs come here, and I have to imagine that they came here. I have to imagine those games are well attended, and I have to imagine that those games are part of an effort to help grow soccer grassroots in the U.S.
I believe they played in the Rose Bowl. They had one of those games. I forget who it was. And didn't Messi play out here also? Am I wrong about that too? So
I don't know, but we got to Zlatan now playing for the LA Galaxy.
I love that guy. I love that guy. I really do. I love his attitude. So what did Frank write? Because it's like a novel.
It is, and he's right. One way to grow the game is to reduce ticket prices. My goodness, I couldn't believe the price. You can't charge $120 for a ticket to see the Carolina Hurricanes in Raleigh on a Tuesday night. You just can't do it. And I understand it's supply and demand, but where is the demand in Raleigh?
Well, Rich, how much did you pay for your tickets in Arizona?
$6 each night.
Well, you can't get it that low, my friend.
$6. You can in Phoenix.
No, this ain't Phoenix.
No, I did it online, and it's really hockey. A lot of the tickets are outrageous, it's supply and demand. You try getting a ticket for Montreal, no matter how good or bad they are, or Toronto on a Saturday. Saturday is the golden day when it comes to ticket prices.
Well, we're getting a lot here. Let me slow down, everybody. Travis in Colchester play a preseason NHL game in Seattle. But then my wife says she believes that there is a team coming to Seattle in the next few years.
There is.
Okay, so we'll see how that's going to play out. And Tristan Wilson said, didn't the Montreal have two teams, the Canadiens and the Maroons?
Yeah, in 1723, the Maroons were. Yes, they did.
All right, coming up next, UVM great Martin St. Louis speaks to the boys. That's next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
He and Brady are back, and they're already starting to argue. The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. It is a Wednesday. It is we are post Red Sox. Red Sox and Royals already played. Now we're looking ahead to the Bruins and the Lightning, game 3 of their Eastern Conference playoff series. We'll have it for you 6:30 tonight over on AM 960 The Zone. Let's talk about a guy who knows a lot about playoff hockey, and he knows about these two teams. It's a guy who won a Stanley Cup with the aforementioned Lightning, won a gold medal for Team Canada, was the NHL MVP at one point, and is a former UVM Catamount. It's our buddy Martin St. Louis. Martin, how are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, and let's start with the team you used to play for in the Lightning. We watched Bruins Lightning Game 2. Tell us what it's like playing in Tampa, a place I don't usually associate with hockey fandom.
Well, I mean, it's a little different than your typical hockey market, you know, in a way that it's kind of a big party outside and they got bands playing. It's quite the atmosphere. It's actually a great experience for a fan to come and watch any games, but playoff, obviously, the intensity, and not just from the players, but from the fans, goes up. So it's definitely an experience I recommend for any hockey fan that can find themselves some time off and get down there.
Let's face it, Tampa Bay was one of those franchises, the expansion franchises, that just worked. But did it work mostly because all the snowbirds that live down there and come from hockey-crazed areas? Or is it because you guys won?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. You know, for the longest time, I feel like we would have great crowds, but we would play, whether it was Boston, New York, Buffalo, any northern team, Montreal, Toronto, any northern team, we felt like we were on the road, you know, like it was a big crowd for the visitors team. But I think slowly and gradually, we obviously winning the cup helped out. We kind of won a lot of, new fans and fans that might have been out-of-town, fans, or they're fans from other teams, and they became Lightning fans pretty quick after that. So combination of both, no doubt.
Martin, we focus on the Bruins, who have a lot of young players experiencing this level of the playoffs for the first time. What do you, as a veteran leader on a team for so many years, how do you handle the young players?
You know, I think the biggest thing with the young guys is just, first and foremost, that understand that they're going to have to raise their game. You know, this isn't game 54 out of 82. This is do or die. Every little plays matter. Everything is magnified, you know, and, that is a must, you know, the on ice stuff, but also managing the emotions, the highs and lows, you know, try to keep it as even keel as you can so that you can just, focus on what's at task and the game planning and stuff. There's some game planning in the regular season, but as you move into a playoff series where you're going to face a team, you know, 5, 6, 7 times, it becomes that much more important to really stick into the adjustments that are made and just the overall game planning.
Martin St. Louis spent part of 16 years in the NHL. He won a Stanley Cup and a gold medal for Team Canada. So I'm going to ask you that question. I'm sure you've been asked it a million times. What's more meaningful, a Stanley Cup or an Olympic gold medal for your country?
I think they both have, a place, a special place in my heart. But, it's hard to duplicate what you go through for a Stanley Cup in terms of the ups and downs of an 82-game schedule, the ups and downs of a deep playoff run and finish on the good side. You know, the injuries and the play-through stuff and, you know, some of the trades, the deadline. There's so many things that that come into play that I feel that it's not that it's not hard to win a gold medal, but you got to go through so much more as a team to win a Stanley Cup. So I'm fortunate to have experienced both and been on the winning side in both. But I would say a Stanley Cup is probably a little more time consuming, therefore probably a tad ahead to me than my Olympic gold, without disrespecting the Olympic gold.
With that being said, what did you make of NHL players not playing in the Olympics?
Well, a lot of it is not their choice, really. You know, it's a league-wide decision, and, you know, I think every guy, you know, would like to have that experience. But, you know, you're at the decision of, you know, the league and the owners, and you kind of, you know, everybody's going to be entitled to their opinion. And personally, I mean, I'd like to play in the Olympic, but traveling all the way to, where was it this year, South Korea.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a quick turnaround, and it's long.
Martin St. Louis with us, also a UVM product, spent 4 years playing for the Catamounts. So let's switch gears here and talk about UVM. A bit of a down year this year, I think Rich would agree, ninth in Hockey East. What can UVM do, in your opinion, to get back to real prominence on the national stage, Martin?
That's a magic question. I mean, obviously, it's continuing to try to recruit the best talent as you can. You know, I think it starts with that. I think the new project, the new building, improve the facility. I think that helps in the recruiting part and trying to compete with some of the, you know, the more successful program. And, you know, when you look at what the recruits can see when they come to the building, and that does help. The one thing they can control is to continue work at it, work hard, hopefully bring some higher-end recruit.
I don't know how many times you've had a chance to get back, but do you get the feeling that a new Gutterson is somewhere on the horizon, finally and eventually?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're heading in the right direction with that. I think there's the right people behind it, me included.
Yeah.
And you're going to need the town has to get, city has to get behind it, university has to get behind it, you know, alums, everybody's got to get behind it. It's not going to happen by itself.
So what do you think, St. Louis Arena? Is that what we're looking at here?
I don't know about that.
Hey, Martin, we'll get you out of here on this. Now, you're a New England guy in college. You're living in New England now. Are you going to go against the Lightning? Are you picking the Bruins in 6 or 7, or are you going with the Lightning in this series?
No, I'm definitely going with the Lightning. I played long enough there. I have a lot of friends that are still playing and part of the, you know, staff and management, whatever. And Mr. Vinnick is an unbelievable owner. What he's done there is tremendous, and I'm always going to be pulling for him.
What did it mean to you, by the way? You became the first member of the Lightning to ever get your number retired. It was a ceremony last season. What did that mean to you? What was that night like?
I mean, it's such an honor, you know, to have the franchise value my time there to the point of putting my jersey in the rafter. It's the ultimate honor as a player. So I felt very blessed.
Martin St. Louis, a Stanley Cup champion, a gold medalist, an NHL MVP, and a Catamount all in one. An impressive resume, a great career. Martin, we appreciate the time. Enjoy the series, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Of course, Martin St. Louis, Rich. And
Martin St. Louis.
Not too shabby, huh? Yeah. Not too shabby. He's a good guy, isn't he?
Arnie, we kicked you out of that interview because we didn't want you asking him about your son.
Yes.
Hey, can you score at my kid? Come on. Yeah. Can you score? What?
He scored on a lot of people in his UVM time. My goodness, you talk about rewriting the record books. You look at some of his numbers and you go, I don't think anyone's touching those for a while.
Well, and he was teammates for 2 years. You talked about this yesterday with Dominique Ducharme, who is...
Close enough.
That's
right, I think. Ducharme. Yeah.
Okay, Dominique Ducharme, who's now the head coach and waiting for the Canadiens. So you talk about two NHL caliber guys, one as a coach, one as a player. That's a pretty good UVM run there in the early to mid-90s.
And Tim Thomas was the goalie.
Yeah.
He was okay. And Eric Perrin won a Stanley Cup alongside St. Louis. And Perrin had the same career stats as St. Louis did. I mean, those two were two peas in a pod out of Montreal.
We need a good run by UVM this year in hockey.
Yeah,
we really need that.
I agree.
It's been a little bit of a while there. We need a good run this year. Hopefully it will work out.
Well, if Shea were in goal. Yeah.
Of course. There's no doubt about that. If he was in goal, it'd be signed, sealed, delivered. We'd be on the way to the Frozen Four for sure.
Why do I incite
Brady,
him?
Do you want to do the mistake of the day now? You want to go and get to that? It's either going to be Tyler in Williston or Brian in wherever he was from.
Brian in
Richmond. Yes.
It's going to be Brian in Richmond.
All right.
So there you go. Tell him what he qualifies for.
He qualifies to try to win that 101.3 ESPN baseball cap thanks to Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms, where they help small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time, and they are in Colchester.
All right. And, of course, Red Sox win today. Excited about that. And What are they now? Like 2.5 games in front of the Yankees? They can't get any separation. As great as they've been playing, they can't get any separation from the Yankees, for crying out loud.
Well, the Yankees have lost, what, one game in the last week and a half. So, yeah, that might have something to do with it. Their 10-game lead turned into a 2.5. And yeah, it is 2.5, by the way, as they head into the Houston matchup tonight.
Yeah, that's a little scary. You'd think after as great as the Red Sox have played, it'd be like a 5-game lead or at least something like that. The Yankees, there's some great teams on the upper echelon. I mean, Arizona, the Astros, the Red Sox, the Yankees.
The Mariners.
My Mets are in first place, and I don't even consider them in the upper echelon as some of those teams. The two biggest, not surprises, but disappointments, obviously, the Dodgers and the Nationals. Brady, did I miss anybody besides those two teams or what?
No, that's right. Dodgers and Nationals both disappointing. By the way, your Mets are a half game ahead of the Mariners.
I know.
So don't knock
the
Mariners.
Yeah. What,
by the way, you're out there. What's the feeling like around L.A. regarding the Dodgers? Of course, it certainly hurt losing Seager for the season. But I mean,
yeah,
what's the thinking? Is this gonna continue?
They're really upset after the run they had last year, and now Seager, as you mentioned, and then the benching was in Triples Alley, and he only got a double. Who was
Clay,
that, Brady?
Cody Bellinger.
Cody Bellinger. And plus with the start, and that's a hard division also. It's not like, you know, you could turn it on and they get a bunch of cupcakes out there. There's big concern. And baseball's a big-time thing here in Los Angeles. I mean, Lakers are certainly nothing to write home about. The Rams are going to be real good, so they've got football back. But it's all about the Dodgers out here. Dodger fans are just crushed with that horrible start. It's just miserable. So we'll see if they turn it around. I got a great story for Last Story Standing. I found a good one. So we'll get to that as we finish out the show. You are in the huddle right here on 101.3.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, I love this Last Story Standing. I don't know if you guys saw this. There's a big soccer fan in Turkey. Did you see this story, guys?
No.
The big soccer fan in Turkey. His name is Ali Demirkaya. And
okay.
If I mispronounced it, you wouldn't have any idea. Anyway, his nickname is Irregular Ali. Anyway, that's what he goes by on the internet. He is the biggest fan of the team in his area. This, you know, they obviously play soccer, but he's been banned from the stadium for 1 year for unspecified reasons. So he is not allowed to watch his team play. And I don't know, in Turkey, they must not have local coverage of the teams on TV or something. So anyway, he can't watch his team. So he decided to rent a crane and get on top of the crane, overlook the stadium, and watch the game that way. By the way, the crane only sent him back $86. And he even started a cheer for the whole stadium, called the local authorities to make sure it was legal. They said it was all okay. We don't know why he was suspended for an entire year from the stadium, but he couldn't be without his beloved soccer team.
Wow.
And he rented the crane for $86, guys.
Make sure you don't imbibe at all like they do before a lot of soccer games. Go up there on a crane. Wow.
You talk about a big fan. He's like, I've got to see the game. It wasn't, I don't even know what a TV or not TV.
The hell of a view.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. Yeah. He started a chant and people were loving it, and he was having a blast. I would do that for $86.
Sure.
That's a great seat. That's pretty cheap also. Yeah.
I'm wondering why, if you can do that legally, hire a crane, say, over the left field wall at Fenway.
Yeah.
Or over the outfield wall at Wrigley Field.
I'll just sit in the blimp. I'll just get a blimp.
Yeah. I think it would be a little bit more than $86. So
maybe.
We'll see how that turned out. I thought that was funny. By the way, the Rockies sent a couple of their rookies to buy 20 cups of coffee at the local Starbucks. Sent them back $111.
Yeah,
they had to take a cart and push it through outside of Wrigley Field while getting coffee for everybody on the team.
And it won. They won 11-2, fully caffeinated.
I love that. Brady, what's coming up on Champlain Valley Game Night tonight?
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the Red Sox win. What did we see from Drew Pomeranz? Some good news regarding Dustin Pedroia. And we'll get one Patriots perspective on something coming up this season.
All right. Great job, boys. No interns, so I don't have to thank anybody. But for Brady, for Rich, I'm Arnie. Champagne Valley Game Night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.